Ike, by the time he left Abilene, Kansas, was almost completely formed. This is what he was, and that is what he remained until the very last.
Through this world, it has been my fortune or misfortune to wander at considerable distances. Never has this town been outside my heart and my memory. Here are some of my oldest and dearest friends. Here are men that helped me start my own career and help my son start his. Here are people that are lifelong friends of my mother and my late father, the really two great individuals of the Eisenhower family.
And so the ceremonies end as the nation pays a final farewell and tribute to Dwight Eisenhower. He has returned home to the Kansas prairies where he grew up, home to Abilene.
The Eisenhower Years, a chronicle and sound of the life of Dwight Eisenhower. Produced by Extension Radio Television at Kansas State University. This week, Abilene, the formative years.
This is Abilene, Kansas. It's not much changed from the turn of the century when Dwight Eisenhower grew up here. Of course, the physical characteristics have changed. There are new buildings on Main Street mixed with the old. There are automobiles and trucks on paved streets now. And, of course, the town is much larger. But attitudes have changed little. There's still a fierce feeling of independence here. This is the Bible Belt, and religion plays an important part in the lives of the people who live here. And the Puritan ethic is still very much in evidence, as it was when Dwight Eisenhower was a boy. And as Eisenhower biographer Ken Davis has said, what Ike was as a general and a president, he acquired here as a boy. Eisenhower the man developed from Eisenhower the boy and the upbringing he had in Abilene. In 1891, the Eisenhower family moved back here to Abilene after living a short time in Denison, Texas. During that time in Texas, Dwight Eisenhower was born. He was still an infant when David and Ida Eisenhower moved with their three sons back to Abilene, where David became the engineer of the Bell Springs Creamery. That creamery still operating just two blocks down this street. Biographer Ken Davis.
I think they were more close-knit than most families. It was a very religious family, for one thing. They read a lot of Bible reading, and every one of the boys reacted against that by not being religious at all in the Orthodox sense. And they weren't conscious of it, apparently, at the time. At least they say they weren't. But they were really, rather, even by Abilene standards, they were not rich, certainly. They were not I suppose it would be what would be called really the middle class of Abilene. But there were in Abilene some rather wealthy people, and they were conscious of the fact that they were not in the social elite at all. And they always felt, they were very conscious of themselves as a family, and this made for a certain kind of selflessness which single children don't have. All the boys that grew up in Abilene in that period, it's an amazing generation that grew up in that little town. There were more college presidents, bank presidents, railroad presidents, just out of a town of about maybe 2,000, 2,500. Amazing, really amazing.
I think that we were still in that place in our development where there was a little bit of the old pioneer. You did for yourselves. Everybody not only realized the necessity for work, but there was no resistance to it. You just accepted it as a way of life. Well, we sneered at anyone that said we were in underprivileged or anything like that. We didn't know those words in those days anyway. If either the town, the county, or the or the federal government tried to give us a dollar, why, I think everybody in the town would have been outraged. This was terrible. Times have changed, but we were still just in the last edges, you might say, of that era where people were expected to work to take care of themselves. That's all.
The earliest American Eisenhowers came to Pennsylvania with a party of Mennonites from Europe in 1741. They settled along the banks of the Susquehanna River, thus became known as River Brethren. In 1794, Frederick Eisenhower was born, grew to become a highly skilled weaver. He married Barbara Dan Miller. They raised six children to maturity. One of them was named Jacob, born 1828. He became a minister and farmer, and was generally considered the outstanding member of his family's generation. Jacob Eisenhower married Rebecca Matter. They had six children who lived to maturity. One of those six was named David Jacob Eisenhower, born 1863. In 1878, Jacob Eisenhower moved his family, including David, from Pennsylvania to Dickinson County, Kansas. They became part of a River Brethren colony of some 200 there. The Eisenhowers prospered on the land. And in 1885, on his 22nd birthday, David Jacob Eisenhower took a wife, Ida Elizabeth Stover. She was of German Mennonite stock, raised a Lutheran in Virginia. She was a year and 5 months older than her husband. And from that union of David Jacob Eisenhower and Ida Stover Eisenhower would come six sons. All would excel. One would become president of the United States. David Eisenhower was head of the family, but there can be little doubt that it was Ida Eisenhower who guided it. It was she who shaped her sons' lives.
She was a pretty good organizer. She was very highly intelligent, and she was a very strong woman. And the thing about her is this. She's the happiest woman I ever knew in all my life. She believed her Bible implicitly. She read it all the time. She could quote verse by verse. And she just absolutely believed everything was going to be all right with the world when the proper time came. And she was a very happy person.
I'm sure that a lot of the charm that Ike had and that Milton has was from her. Charm is hard to explain what it is, really. But she had that. She was exciting, you know, when she was herself. And she could make you feel excited and alive. And this is the great thing that Milton could do and that Ike could do.
Our mother was very understanding. Now, of course, at times when we got so far out of line that she had to call Dad in the evening when he came from work and take us over, that was a little different story. Well, when he came, Liz has put us, he was the general court martial. She was sort of a summary court martial.
Three key ingredients in the upbringing of the Eisenhower boys: religion, discipline, and work. Religion was of particular importance to David and Ida Eisenhower. They often found solace in Scripture.
My mother, I think, had been raised as a Lutheran. My father, here in with the Pennsylvania Dutch, I think he was an offshoot of the Mennonite group. They called him River Brother. So both of them had been raised in a very strictly religious life. But there's this about it. For themselves, I noticed that none of them really followed the doctrine or dogma of any particular sect. They just went back to their Bible. My father read Greek very well. He'd go back to his Greek Bible and interpret for himself every once in a while. And we'd discuss the possible meanings through his interpretation of a passage. Both of them were very happy in their religion, particularly my mother. My mother just, everything's going to be right in the world in the long run, because that's the way the Lord's going to have it. And she just believed this completely. That's all there was to it.
Ida Eisenhower led the daily Bible reading sessions. They were often lengthy, designed to reinforce the Sunday school teachings in the River Brethren Meeting House. Young Ike at one time was given a gold watch for completely reading the Bible.
One thing that I'm proud of, that my mother, each evening, when I'd say I'd gone this far, she'd just take those chapters and I had to give her the sense of them. Certain chapters, I always called them the begat chapters, you know. And so-and-so begat so-and-so and so. My mother allowed me to skip those. She said they had no meaning.
As a matter of fact, Dwight Eisenhower's name came from his mother's religious background.
There was an evangelist in her girlhood that was called Dwight L. Moody. And apparently she had some admiration for him, and I think that the name Dwight came from that.
Ike's name originally was David Dwight Eisenhower, but it was later changed.
My father's name was David Davis Jacob. And so, mother, just because he was David, she began to call me Dwight. And I got the notion that my name was Dwight David. And I gave that as my name when I went to West Point. And it became officially that, and so I just thought about changing.
Growing up in Abilene meant work for the Eisenhower boys, all of them, regardless of age.
They had to work very hard. They really did. I think David Eisenhower, the father, never made more than $100 a month for, you know, until the boys were practically grown up, which was small for anyone in those days, even then. And he had all these kids to raise. So they all had to work very hard, and they all learned a lot of that kind of discipline.
In my boyhood, it was normal for boys to work. There were few people so wealthy that their children didn't want and didn't have to work. And in my day, my chore was, I remember it until I got a little bigger, was always getting the kindling. It had to be a fire started in the morning, and I had to get the kindling in the evening. Well, I thought I was terribly abused. I can remember whimpering and yelling and howling about it, but I had to do it. And it was good for me. And every one of the boys had it, and then sometimes these chores were rotated as we get older, bigger. But it was a responsibility to do this, and until you did that, you didn't get any playtime. And, of course, it was always a race who could get the catcher's glove or the first baseman's glove, if we had one. And that, you had to get your work done quickly.
The original Eisenhower home in Abilene was a one-story bungalow. But early in Ike's boyhood, they moved to a two-story white clapboard house nearby. It was on a city block of land put to good use.
Part of our discipline was to taking care of that block. We farmed it. We had two cows, we had a lot of chickens, we had two horses, and things of that kind.
In addition to the family garden, each of the Eisenhower boys was given his own plot of ground, allowed to raise any kind of vegetables he chose, for sale to neighbors, the profit his to keep. Ike chose to grow and sell sweet corn and cucumbers. He didn't like peddling vegetables, but it was a way to earn money for things like bats and balls and gloves. There was time for that side of growing up in Abilene as well.
We knew only three things: baseball, football, and two or three of us boxing. But baseball, any time we were free, all of us were for baseball, particularly Edgar and Roy and I. We could make third of a team ourselves, and we'd get over here in the school ground, and we would play every minute that we possibly get.
Young Eisenhower was husky and loved athletics. He organized Abilene High School's Athletic Association and served as its first president, and played on the school's baseball and football teams.
When I was a kid, and when we used to go around the little high school teams to play in the local towns, I was called Swede. Hey, Swede, get that Swede out of there, and so on. Well, I was substitute in on the high school team when I was weighed 116, I remember that, and the fellow on the other end was 170. And I had to work pretty hard. I always liked bodily contact. And the coaches, just because I just loved to crash into someone, I guess they put me in. I was fairly fast. But baseball was my love. I remember the life of all of us boys together.
Yes.
It was far more of fun and frolic than it was just a drudgery. We never felt that we were somebody that Scrooge, you know, was just beating her over the head and making doing something. We were, on the contrary, felt we had a pretty good thing going here.
Among the good things going for young Dwight Eisenhower in his boyhood in Abilene were hunting and fishing trips with a friend who taught him things he would remember the rest of his life. His name was Bob Davis. He was Ike's boyhood hero. Ike described him as a traveler, fisherman, hunter, guide, bachelor, philosopher, and teacher, in that order.
He was much older, but strange enough, my mother would trust me out with him, although we'd go out and sometimes spend a whole weekend on a river where he was a fisherman, and in the fall and winter, he'd trap, be a trapper. And I learned from him many things, and he was really an old philosopher in his own right, although he was not completely illiterate. He was very bright, very smart, but he just had never had much formal schooling.
One of the things Ike learned from Bob Davis and used the rest of his life was how to play poker the right way.
As a matter of fact, he was just passing the time by a campfire. He had an old deck of cards that was so dog-eared, they looked like they'd been lace almost on the edges, very dirty lace. And he taught me percentages, and they just stuck with me all my life. Very few people really know any much about poker. Of course, the pros and the gamblers do, but I mean the average citizen thinks he can play poker. He just believes in his luck, and he'll draw from anything from an inside straight to two spades and try to hope to make a flush. This is the kind of thing that a man who's been raised on percentages never even dreams of doing. And so he wins, that's all.
Young Ike had a temper. He came by it honestly. His father could show anger at an impressive level. Ike described his father's temper once as a temper that could blaze with frightening suddenness. But it was Ida Eisenhower who taught young Ike a lesson in temper control, a lesson he carried with him as a general and as president.
As a matter of fact, I learned to control it from my mother and a little talk she gave to me, I guess when I wasn't over 10, and I didn't, of course, appreciate it until I was probably 35 or 40. It was on a Halloween evening. My two older brothers had gotten permission to go up and join a little group, and I wanted to go along. And my folks decided that I was too young and I couldn't do it. So I bellowed and did everything I could to get them to change their mind, but finally off went my two brothers. Now, this is about the last thing I remember of that incident until my dad had me by the collar, and I was really getting a tanning, and I don't mean maybe. And what he had done, he found me, there's an old apple tree, a stump of an apple tree, and for some reason, I guess I thought the apple tree was to blame, and I was there crying as hard as I could and beating this apple tree with my fists, and they were all bleeding and messy. Well, of course, after he got through with his punishment, he says, young man, to bed. So to bed I went. Well, now about a half hour later, my mother came in the room, and she began to talk to me, and she used some Bible verses, but she talked a while and trying to show me how when you really got so angry at someone that you couldn't help yourself, that you were not hurting them at all. They didn't even know it. How could they know it? So you're hurting yourself. Well, then in the meantime, she began to wash my hands and get a little salve on them and wrap them up. And I think that was one of the most important moments of my life.
Part of growing up on the prairie in Abilene in those days was the ability to fight. Fighting was a legend in Abilene. Its Wild West history was steeped in it. And that carried down to the Eisenhower boys and their school chums.
Oh, in those days, they fought in Abilene. Yeah, I was astonished at they used to knock each other unconscious. You know, kids don't do that. Or nowadays, they never fight at all, apparently. But Even when I was growing up, very seldom was there a fight where anyone was really badly hurt. But in Abilene, they really slaughtered one another.
One of the legendary Abilene fights involved 13-year-old Dwight Eisenhower, who hailed from the south side of the tracks, pitted against Wesley Merrifield from the north side. Merrifield was heavier and faster, but Ike stuck with him. Witnesses say the fight lasted 2 hours, long after either boy could strike an effective blow, and it ended in a draw, with each admitting he hadn't licked the other. Another of the oft-told tales of the Eisenhower boyhood concerned the flood of 1903. Edgar and Ike were enjoying a water sport of sorts, but it could have proved quite dangerous.
My brother and I went off in doing a flood, and we found a floating sidewalk. And we got a lot of boys to go with us, and we were going down the street that was just a raging torrent down toward the river. And luckily, some man breaking through on his horse at a high ground, he just saw us, and he made us get off and not go no further. And so finally, he got us back into town. And when my father knew about that, why, Edgar and I really had, we were in for it.
The discipline of work was the discipline of study, although Ike admits students in his day didn't have as much homework as students today. His prime interests were in history and geometry. Kenneth Davis.
He soaked up facts like a blotter. He had a very retentive memory about things that interested him, and a lot of things did interest him.
He was a very good student, never any trouble, behaved himself.
Ike's elementary teacher, Mrs. Emma Wolfe.
They believed in the children behaving themselves first, and all had to work. They were taught to each one took his part of work at different times. They could cook, they could do the garden work, they could just do anything that parents demanded.
When Dwight Eisenhower was 15, his life was nearly taken. He fell and skinned his knee, and blood poisoning developed and spread.
The strange thing about that... There was no bleeding, just a raw place. I paid no attention. And I can't remember how, when I really showed the effects. But I think it was the second night that I came home and I lay down and I became delirious. And my folks then found out I had a terrific fever and got me into bed, got the doctor. And for a couple of weeks, I was a very sick boy.
So sick, in fact, that there was talk of amputating the leg to save Ike's life. But he made Edgar promise he would stand by his bedside and not let them operate. Ike said he'd rather die than be a cripple.
Strangely enough, you know, the disease seemed to follow up into my body and on down into my foot, too, along the skin. And finally, a doctor that came up from Topeka to consult with our own family doctor advised the use of a carbolic acid to paint a belt around me. And this stopped it because they thought if it ever got up as far as my heart or chest, then I was through. But this time it had become too late to amputate because it was up in my groin and my body.
From that, Dwight Eisenhower learned another lesson he would remember and use through life. That will is a strong weapon. Ike's high school record was excellent. His scholastic record, the highest in his graduating class of 1909. The school prophecy indicated that Ike would someday be a professor at Yale, and that his brother Edgar would serve 2 terms as U.S. president. Following his graduation, Ike took a full-time job at the Bell Springs Creamery to save money for his further education and to help Edgar with his. Ike worked 7 nights a week as an engineer, 12 hours a night. That was all part of the ethic by which Dwight Eisenhower was raised. The family, the close-knit but self-reliant family, the religion-steeped lifestyle, the independence of the individual, the belief in work as the answer. In short, the milieu of the Eisenhower boyhood.
Those days, just as a matter of
of, you might say, of absorption. Not by, not just with the hickory stick, as absorption. We learned discipline. We learned organization, had to cooperate, and we certainly learned responsibility.
They raised their kids to be very self-reliant. They never interfered with any part of that. They were responsible for themselves, and they were responsible for what they did.
Well, I think my parents were successful in instilling, you might say, decent ambition in all their boys. My mother and father both were saying, well, if you want to go to college, go. There's nothing stopping you. And they refused to even hint that the lack of money could keep you from going to college if you really wanted to. My mother had a number of sayings about sink or swim or survive or perish or things of that kind. And she said, just how strongly is your desire to do these things? And I think, therefore, they were constantly trying to show us that you got anywhere by your own efforts and by how well you could do your work, whatever you chose.
There were two influences that played on Eisenhower and made for the kind of tension which made for uniqueness in him. One was the Abilene Cowtown tradition. You know, this was a town where Wild Bill Hickok was the great hero, and Ike all his life read Western pulp magazines for relaxation. It was a town which had these kid fights which were in the old rough, tough Wild West tradition, certainly. But Ike's personal family was a Mennonite family, which is very committed to puritanical, not Yankee Puritan, but to puritanical conceptions of right and wrong, and very religious, much Bible reading, much piety of the Orthodox kind. And these were two opposite. The tension between those two, I think, had a lot to do with shaping Eisenhower's character as he turned out. He was a Democrat, a real Democrat in the sense of the Christian is, who was brought up in the Puritan tradition. There's a real relationship, it seems to me, always has seemed to me, between Puritanism and democracy. Because every man is absolutely a center of measure of value in the Puritan tradition. And I was brought up in that tradition. But there was also this wild cowtown, tough tradition, which was the opposite of pacifistic. And I think that this influenced Eisenhower's development very much.
Never has this town been outside my heart and my memory. Here,
by the time he left Abilene, Kansas, he was almost completely formed.
My mother and my late father, the really two great individuals of the Eisenhower family.
Excited and alive, and this is the great thing that Milton could do.
They believed in the children behaving themselves first, and all had to work.
I think that was one of the most important moments of my life.
This is what he was, and that is what he remained until the very last.
The Eisenhower Years, produced by Extension Radio Television at Kansas State University on a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The producer-narrator is Ralph Titus. Research by Anne Frank. Music for the Eisenhower Years was composed by Gail Kubik. Performed by the Kansas State University Chamber Symphony, conducted by Luther Levengood. Our thanks to the following organizations for materials used in this week's broadcast. WCAU Radio, Philadelphia. WFLN Radio, Philadelphia, Metro Media Radio, New York, Time Life Broadcasting, San Diego, and CBS News. Next week, West Point and beyond. This is Paul DeWeese.